Today's session has been created to help you move into a deep and relaxing sleep. Now, maybe you have some difficulty going to sleep, or perhaps you wake up in the middle of the night and just can't get back to sleep. Whatever the reason, this session today will help you. So, let's get started.
What is up, Slashers and Survivor Girls? Welcome to this special bonus wrap-up episode of our Nightmare on Elm Street series. I'm Mistress Meg.
I'm the good buddy Loungebox.
And so this should be a relatively quickie bonus episode, although we say that for every one, and they all end up being an hour long.
Not even close.
Yeah.
I say it's like, you know, if we're going to fucking talk, let's just talk it out.
Right, right, right. So we've come to the end of our Nightmare on Elm Street franchise review. For those who were going, hey, you're missing a few. It's because we've done those already. You have to go back in the catalog to see them. But we have officially completed all 9 Nightmare on Elm Street movies. So we were up to
I believe
nine,
so, yeah.
6, 7, 8. Yep, 9. 9 Nightmare on Elm Street movies. So for this one, we're going to have fun and do a little ranking. We've taken our collective skull ratings for all of them, averaged them out, and managed to rank from worst to best. So we're going to start with number 9.
I'm ready to get in on all this because I'm drinking my Lanani. And
your Alani Nu.
Yeah, and while wearing my Cannibal Corpse shirt.
So before we get into the actual bulk of the episode, I may or may not have accidentally got Lunchbox hooked on the Alani Nu girly energy drinks.
These things are fucking delicious.
They really are good.
The mimosa? Bitch, please. Like, that is my favorite drink.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the cherry slushy is quickly becoming... Hey, Alani.
Can we get a Lunchbox flavor?
Can we get a sponsorship? Ooh. I will hawk your shit all day long.
A creepin' lime?
They make really good gummy bears, too.
Do they really?
They make gummy bears.
Holy nuts. Yeah. Yes, but I am totally in my death metal t-shirt, drinking my fancy energy
drink. Your girliest energy drink.
It's so tasty.
So tasty.
And while you're in our daughter's unicorn blanky hoodie thing, it's
cozy.
We grown.
And it makes me feel adorable.
We grown,
I feel,
folks.
I feel fancy and like a unicorn princess.
But yes, but now onward with our rankings. So, I mean, how do you want to actually tackle this one? Because if anybody is actually listened to our show, you knew that we did our Halloween retrospective that kind of did the same thing. But we went from front to back on this one. Well, with this, even though we've already kind of already done the episodes and we've just kind of filled in with the ones that we missed, I mean, how do you feel like you want to jump in on this?
I think we'll just take it. We've got the ranking from worst to best. I think we'll just go in, maybe give a quickie synopsis of our feelings on the movie and try to move on, because if they want more in, you know, if anyone listening wants more in-depth opinions and thoughts on whichever film, to see how we got to said number,
yeah,
then they're more than welcome to go back in the catalog and be like, the fuck? And then go ahead and
they said what?
Yeah, and see exactly what we were talking about. However, I don't know. Should we warn everybody that this could potentially ruffle some feathers?
There is potential. However, I will say that it makes me happy that our first episode is probably one of our higher listen to episodes, like, mm-hmm, when you actually go through our analytics and stuff like that. Granted, that was our first one and it had some time, you know, for people to like listen and stuff like that, but I think it's like number 3 on the list.
It's also one of, yeah, our more awkward episodes because we were not sure what we were doing just yet.
Yeah, we were like baby deer in it. Like,
oh,
we were
just, yeah,
we were Bambiing the hell out of that thing.
Uh-huh.
So, but that was
Mother! I mean,
yeah. That was the thing is, for me, going through that first episode, and I think I want to start there, is like with that first episode, I had it in my head because I was just a horror movie fan. I knew that Freddy Krueger was like one of my all-time favorite slashers, movie monsters, end-all be-all. Like, he was the shit. Robert Englund is amazing. I went into it thinking, I was like, man, this is going to be an easy win. And then as we were like actually watching it for the podcast, and I think that kind of ruins movies for me in a little way, because then I go, I'm looking at it more of a through a critical eye, mm-hmm. and not as a fan, and that hurt, because with the first film it was like oh man, there's a lot in there. Yeah. It's like, was it really that good where I had this level? And thinking back to all those other like fans that we've seen at like conventions and stuff like that love Freddy, dress up as Freddy, it's like, are they dressing up as Freddy because of a certain film, or is it just Freddy in a whole as to what that character is?
I don't know. I do think, keep this question in the back of your mind for the end of the episode.
Okay.
Keep this question. We don't need to answer it now, but what I was thinking about, and I think you need to think about too, is how has going through the entire series from front to back, being a bit more critical and being a little more observational about it, how has that changed your opinions, good, bad, or indifferent? I think just keep that in the back of your mind as we run through these movies, and then we can kind of go back and revisit that question at the end. Because I think that's an important one, especially considering that episode one of this entire show was Nightmare on Elm Street, the first from 1984.
Yeah, I was just more surprised with that first show, where you and me had a very different opinion than what I thought was going to end mm-hmm. up being.
And yeah, we thought it was going to be a layup, and it wasn't.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God. Like, I mean, I love the movie, but it's just one of the, because it's iconic and everything else, but it was just very interesting. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of movies on this list that I kind of felt was like that. And yeah. It was hilarious when I was doing the, like, I did your little Excel spreadsheets, you know, of all of our skull rankings and stuff like that. And I do, like, if we both liked a movie, it was green. If we both disliked a movie, it was red. And literally, this whole thing was just, it looked like Freddy's sweater. It was red, green, red. I was like, holy crap, like, that's actually really cool. But very interesting that it kind of fell that way. And we also here at Creepin' love to hear back from you guys. So, I mean, if there was something that you guys don't agree with us on, or you feel like we're crazy, or if you guys do agree with us, you know, I want to hear, because it's like, I need to hear those opinions. Like, it's,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. So keep that question in the back of your head, and mm-hmm. let's go ahead and get this bad boy started. So all the way at the dead bottom, to the surprise of absolutely no one, is Freddy's dead.
Oh, really? I thought it was Jaws of Revenge.
That's not part of the nightmare.
Damn it. Cause Jaws.
Yeah, sure.
Go listen to that episode. That was awesome for my birthdays.
No, super fun. Also, the graphic you did.
It's so awesome.
For the social media was fucking hilarious.
Before you get into Freddy's Dead, it's like, as a cheap, you know, cheap plug for myself, I do a lot of like cartoon me works. You know, I custom artworks like and stuff like that. It was like a
little kid's marker drawing from like the fourth grade.
Like, I actually try to put effort into our, like, and if you actually go on our Instagram, I've started doing like any of our movie like announcement stills, like that's my artwork that I do. But for Jaws of Revenge, I was like, it was such a shit movie. It's like, I have to get a shitty artwork. So
it was adorable and hilarious.
My mom thought her daughter did it.
No, I mean, she could have, I was like, but pretty much. It really wasn't a whole lot better than what our 5-year-old does. Nope. So that'll do it.
Thank God I don't have to do one for Freddy's Dead. Holy shit.
Yeah. No, we're past that.
Oh, actually, you know what? I probably would have done a good one, because I've done like the 3D glasses, and I probably could have made it look a lot cooler than what it really
was. Sure, keep that in mind when you're doing up the graphic for this episode, though. All right, so at the very bottom of the, scraping the very bottom of the barrel, was Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, with a whopping 1.4 skulls.
And this is our collective rating.
This is the average skull rating. This is the average
between the two of us.
Mm-hmm. So 1.4 on Freddy's Dead. I'm not going to beat the horse anymore. It's already dead. So But this movie sucks. It will forever suck. And if I never have to watch it again, I will be very fortunate indeed.
It's a load-bearing poster.
Stop it. It's
all right. Simpsons references. But yeah, like, that's the thing.
This movie's just bad.
There's just so much. And I think with this movie, it's like, I think we killed it. I can't tell whether or not it was... I mean, I think it was just more of the goofiness. Like, it didn't have that...
Oh, it was a live-action Looney Tunes cartoon. It was awful.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, the whole thing with, like, the John Doe and the... it's like... just all the stuff that was going into the stuff where Freddy's, like, trying to push him out of, like... It was just too much. And then it's like, oh, he's trying to find his daughter. Like, there's just no... way to make this thing good.
No,
it's just...
and then introducing a whole bunch of brand new character points at the bottom of the ninth is really fucking stupid.
I mean, I understand it's like with franchises where they're trying to keep things fresh or do something, because like they did it with Jason, and where he's the weird demon slug that possesses people. It's like, it doesn't work for me. It's just...
Well, the difference with that is that Jason wasn't being billed as his final movie ever. This was.
Yeah.
This was billed as the final nightmare.
Yeah. So, I mean, but a little part of me was like, and this is stupid, but one of my favorite things about the movie is fucking Roseanne and Tom Arnold.
Yeah.
Just because it's just like, it's such a weird
cameo thing.
But then Tom Arnold doing like his weirdest like hillbilly impression, like that's not a hillbilly. It's just the, come on, Ethel. Like, what are you doing?
Oh.
Let the kids go.
Yeah, it was stupid. And not for nothing, but Robert Englund totally phoned this in.
Great graphics.
It was brutal. All right, number 8. Moving up the list was A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5, The Dream Child, with a 2.1 on the skull rating scale.
Yeah, that was pretty low.
I think it only got that high was because I found some twisted enjoyment in it.
And that was something where, like, when we separate the skull ratings, where you had a much higher rating than I did.
You gave this a 1.
I gave it a solid 1, which is very surprising because I think for Freddy's Dead, I think it was pretty close to like 1 or like 1.2.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only reason I gave Freddy's Dead a little bit more is just because I didn't see it as a horror movie. I saw it as a comedy, and it was just something goofy. And I got, and because I'm a grown man child, you know, I kind of gravitate towards that. But like with The Dream Child, I remember liking it more as a kid, and then watching it again, I was just like, I can't. Like, this is, it's just going all over the place.
Yeah, I liked that the movie took chances, and I liked that they were going completely off the wall with it. And no, it is not a good movie, and the script makes no sense, but it was fun. It was bad 80s fun.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason why I even ranked it as high as I did, was because it the cheese of it all. Yeah.
The one thing that I do applaud it for is trying to give another kind of idea or structure to Freddy as to how he can get to them. So having a child inside Alice, and where they're kind of playing with the whole thing of, like, you know, baby's dreaming. Well, it's like, okay, there it is. There's Freddy's out.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Good job. Like, I love that they were trying to step outside the box on that one. However, throughout our, you know, the actual episode that we wrote or did, the whole time I'm sitting there going, it's like, oh, great idea. Oh, you fucked it up. Like, the whole time is like, that's the way the movie went, was great idea. And then you messed it up. Like,
yeah.
It was just, you just need to just keep on going and then just stop.
Yeah, I find a lot of sick fun in this one, but it is not great.
Mm-mm.
In a very close race to that one, though, in a very close race to the bottom is, for number 7, is Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, The Dream Master, with a 2.13 skull rating.
Yeah, those are...
I think we were flipped on this one, because I found this one to be exponentially more stupid in a less entertaining way.
That's why I was so surprised when you were going through, or when we were actually doing the episode, because it was more like, I thought that Master was going to be better for you than Dream Child. Mm-hmm. And when you were like, nope, Dream Child was like, was so much more enjoyable. And I was just like, that's, doesn't make any sense to my brain. So.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I mean, for Dream Master, I think it was. I like that, again, another good idea. It's like you're trying to continue on the franchise and you know, get new people in there. However, you killed off the best character in the entire thing, like, really early on. And then all of a sudden, then you gave the new girl this weird power in this weird way. And
it was everything was inconsistent, and none of it made sense. And this was just a case of where Dream Child suffered from franchise fatigue on top of a sloppy script. Dream Master had the unfortunate duty of following up Dream Warriors, which was a great film, but also being written and fucked with on the fly as well. So there was a sloppy script on top of having to follow a much better movie.
Yeah. It's so like when you rush to make a sandwich. Like, it's like you get all the ingredients there, but you're just like under this, I gotta get the kids to school. Like, it just, and then it's just like, it's just all over the fucking place. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so it gets a bit messy. Number 6, with a 2.25 on the Skull rating scale, is Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge.
Which is very surprising to me that it is that high on the list.
You think so?
I think so. Because that is a very controversial movie. Like, for I guess, really for all, like, Freddy fans. It's not one that you really find that's high on the list. But for me, watching it, I was just like, it was fine for me.
I think over the last 10 or 15 years, this one has gotten reevaluated by the fandom. I think it's developed a new appreciation for it. It's weird. It's a weird little outlier. But this was them trying to figure out how to continue the Freddy lore. So you can look at it and say, well, it seems like they're breaking a lot of rules and those sorts of things, but there really weren't any established just yet. And the idea, I like kind of like the possession idea. I love the psychosexual element of it.
The hip thrusting.
No.
Come on. You know that scene every single time. You're sitting there thrusting with them like, yeah.
Bumping his booty against the drawer. That's embarrassing. So I have secondhand embarrassment watching that scene for Mark Hatton.
I know for a fact we used to live together, and there was times where I would come into the room, you wouldn't know it, and you're sitting there just booty bumping your own. I know what you do.
Love me, baby. Drive me crazy. Touch me.
No. Come on. It's the highlight of the movie. Oh, wait. No. The highlight for me in this movie
was the exploding parakeet.
Well, that was fucking awesome, but no. The only way that parakeet would have been funnier is if it like screamed fuck before it blew up, like like that would have been great. But no, the highlight for this movie for me is those fucking dogs.
Yeah, the baby mask dogs
makes. I love those goddamn things so much. For Christmas one year, you found me
the figure set.
Yeah, the figure set that you would get at like Target and stuff like that. They're like, it's like $28 or something like that. They had the one with Freddy in there, and it comes with the two dogs. I love it so much. I have it like propped up on my, it's
ridiculous.
Like, I don't know why it's like, it's one of my favorite things that I own just because of the fucking dogs. I wanted to take it out of the box and play with them and
it's silly. I do think it does deserve a reevaluation, and I think it does deserve a bit more praise than it was getting for kind of being the redheaded stepchild of the series.
I mean, that one scene where he's coming out of him, like, I mean, just
well,
like,
the scene where Jesse shows up, where Jesse shows up in his friend's room and he's trying to relay how much pain he's in and how Freddy, like, that's pretty emotional, which is a little bit more highbrow than the series is used to. Yeah.
I mean,
whether it lands or not,
and it's like a lot of the gay tones and everything like that. I mean, it's like really like when we were watching it through, and I know we're going a little bit long, but it's like when we were watching it for the for the podcast, it's like I kind of separated all of that and just kind of took it as just like what is actually happening. Yeah, the shit with the shower scene and the coach and then
the coach's balls.
And then fucking, it was Bob Shea.
The Leather Daddy bartender?
Leather Daddy. It's like, you know, like all that stuff is like, I get it. But it's like, really, it's like, you know, he wasn't going through anything that any of the other kids weren't going through. And it's like, so, I like, as you said, the possession stuff and it's them finding Freddy because we don't have that lore yet. So it could be anything.
Yeah.
And they could have continued on with that.
Yeah, they just decided not to.
And,
I really do think there were some good ideas in that movie that were just abandoned. It doesn't fit in with the rest of the series as it would become later. It become, as more movies were produced, it sort of became very obviously the one that stuck out as
a booty bump.
Yeah. One of these things just doesn't belong here.
Touch me, baby.
All right. Number five is probably going to be the most controversial of all of them.
Drop it on them.
Nightmare on Elm Street, 1984.
Mm-hmm. Number five.
Three Skulls is bringing up the middle.
Right down the ass crack.
If you go back and listen to our episode, we picked this one apart pretty well, and I tried to be objective about it. This one, for me, suffered quite a lot because, as I've mentioned in other episodes, that Wes Craven's New Nightmare was the first Freddy Krueger movie that I had ever seen. So when I went back, obviously, when you go back into something, you start at the beginning. And immediately when we're introduced to Freddy and he's doing the outstretched arms in the alleyway, I thought it was stupid. This one suffers from bad acting. This one suffers from bad dialogue. This one suffers from the ending being the way that it is.
Oh, I feel like $1 million.
Not even just that. Even before that, where, the trick to getting rid of the dream demon is to say, I don't believe in you anymore, and I'm taking back my power.
And you turn your back on it.
Right. That is not satisfying. That's not a good resolution. It's kind of lazy and kind of dumb. And, yeah, on one hand, I guess you could say it's clever because it's an odd way to end. Like, it's an odd way to solve your problem.
Nope.
But it's also just, like, I personally have never found it empowering. Which I think it was supposed to be, was Nancy was grown up, at the end of it, grew up, took back her power, where she started at the beginning of the movie as being a little bit more meek and submissive. She was supposed to have become empowered at the end. Cool, great, that's fantastic and all. However, it's lame. It will forever be lame. And while this is probably the best version of Freddy Krueger we get in that initial first six, like, through the 80s run, it's not a great movie.
See, the thing that I had a problem with that whole ending, as, again, go back and listen, but as we were going through it and watching it for the podcast and being more, you know, just critical of it, it always kind of put me in a weird spot where Nancy was all about survival, and she was reading books on booby traps, mm-hmm. and she set up her whole house to survive, and all of a sudden, then at the end, it's like, all you did was turn your back on him. Why did you go through all of that to get away from this fucker after you pull him into your dream? Why didn't you just go, like, just in your dream, just, I'm not afraid of you, and then, like...
Yeah, you went through all the trouble to pull him out for what?
Yeah, for what? And it's like, and then at the end of it, where it's like, oh, that didn't work at all.
Yeah.
And,
I don't know. I think because this is the first one, it got raised to legendary status, which is fine. It deserves a place because it launched, first of all, a humongous franchise. It launched Wes Craven's career. It did a lot of really good things for the genre. It created a character that would become an icon. It was a very marketable, commercially successful character. It it launched, it made millions and millions of dollars. It's still inspiring a lot of kids to get into horror today, which is great. But I think this, giving it the 3-skull flat rating is appropriate. It's a mediocre movie. It's not the best thing Wes Craven's done. He's done significantly better movies, even in that
like
same...
Shocker.
No. I was going to go with, say, like, Serpent in the Rainbow or Last House on the Left, but...
You know, whatever.
Yeah, Shocker. Sure.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, like... I think that I'll kind of come back to it at the end, because that my response to that would be your answer to the question. So, yeah. So, solid 3, I mean, it's one of those, like, yeah, it's iconic, and it has its moments where it is fun, it is good, but...
And C's get degrees, everybody, so being in the middle is not bad.
Yeah. Preach.
All right, so number 4. This is... Okay, so before we get into the top 4, I'm going to preface all of these with... A lot of them had... skull ratings on the higher side of things because of the enjoyability factor more than anything else. So getting into that, number 4 is Freddy versus Jason with 3.25 on the skull rating scale. This movie is dumb, but it is so much fun. You could tell Robert Englund was having a blast doing this movie, hamming it up like crazy. You can tell that, you can kind of tell, though, that the script went through many, many iterations.
And then many iterations after that.
10 years in development hell, and we have slasher soup. Yeah. It's a little bit of everything thrown in at once, and...
Bless their hearts.
Yeah.
They tried.
They did, but it's fun. It's fun. It's a fun action movie. You get a lot of... I feel like it's a bit more of a Friday the 13th movie, just because you do have more face time with Jason, but because of the setting, it leans more. It's a nice blend of the two. My one critique is you could have given Freddy a little bit more carnage and a little bit more to do. He only had the one kill with Mark.
Yeah, that Freddy really got the shaft on this one. He did not.
Yeah.
Like, he did, like, the little bit with Jason and the dream and stuff like that, where they was, you know, messing around with him when he became, like, you know, little kid Jason, scared of the water, which also doesn't make fucking sense. But, you know, hey, whatever it is. And then, but that was something that was, like, there's a lot in this movie that, as you said, yeah, doesn't make sense, but it is super enjoyable. I have to give...
It's a popcorn flick.
It is, 100%. But I remember, and I don't know if maybe I like this movie more because of it, that fucking soundtrack is so goddamn good.
It is.
I think we talked about it on the podcast before, and then we did a bonus episode talking about, like, you know, movie soundtracks and stuff like that, and, like, talked about it again because it is such a banger.
They've got everything from Killswitch Engage to El Nino to Chimera on it.
To Hatebreed. Like,
it's,
I mean,
great.
It is basically what art high school was.
Yeah, like, our early 2000s metalcore.
Oh my God. Boom. So nailed good. It. But that's where, and it's like, and they would play the soundtrack throughout the movie, and I'm like, yes, like, let's go.
Yeah, that might sway the vote just a little.
So, but I do have to say that I don't know, do you want to get into the favorite Freddy's?
At the end.
You got it. So, but yes, this movie is just, it is so much fun, but at the same time, it is very much, I give it to Jason. It is a Jason movie.
Yeah, I feel like it's a bit more Freddy of a Jason flair. Movie. Yeah, with a bit of Freddy sprinkled in. But for the most part, like, I liked the cast, minus Monica Keena. Dear God. It was all about, for her... The acting, not great. The tits, fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Her boobs were great in that film. Boy, because they fill out a sweater.
Scrum-diddly-umptious.
The
snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
But he had Catherine Isabel, who is always awesome to see. There was Jason Ritter, who, again, is always awesome to see.
Who is the dude as Freeburg?
Oh, I don't remember his name, but he always gets mistaken for Jason Mewes.
Yeah, we were watching, we were, you know, pulled up on Netflix for our kids, they had all the Goosebumps, the old school Goosebumps.
Yeah.
He's fucking in one of them. And we're sitting there, like, watching. We're like, he looks so goddamn familiar. Like, it's Freebird.
Yeah, yeah. So Freebird had been around for a minute. He was in an episode of Goosebumps, like, eight or nine years prior. So there's that. But yeah, this one's dumb fun. And it's got the bitchin' soundtrack, which pulls on all the nostalgia strings. So, yeah, Freddy vs. Jason, pretty solid with a 3.25.
Dang.
Okay, you ready to open the hate mail?
Yeah, let's go. And please, I want to hear it. If you want to discuss with me, let's do this.
Number three, The Nightmare on Elm Street remake from 2010 with a 3.85 skull rating. I spent almost 90 minutes defending this movie.
Yep.
Go back and listen to that firestorm of controversial opinions. I think script-wise, it's very much on par with the 1984 film. There's a lot of problems, specifically with the special effects.
100%.
But again, I will die on the hill, because I am a Doctor Who fan. If you cannot get past bad special effects, you don't deserve a good film. So I have...
At least this one didn't have trash bag monsters.
Or people wrapped in bubble wrap and spray painted green.
Pretty much.
That was still a really good episode of Who,
by the way. That was a good episode.
It was a great episode. Real bad. Is that
Welcome to the Doctor Who podcast, everybody.
But I looked at that one and I was like, is that bubble wrap?
It is bubble wrap.
Oh, fuck, he's wearing bubble wrap. Oh, the BBC budgets. The biggest issue I had was I hated the retreading of the stuff from the original movie. I didn't really care for it. I really thought that they had enough good stuff that was new and fresh to add to it that they didn't have to do necessarily the fan winky stuff. Like, maybe if they did, like, one of them. Like, the bathtub thing I thought was great. Their twist on the bathtub scene was great. Nancy didn't get dragged down, almost drowned. She ended up having to wake up. She walked out into the snow, and it was like an Inception-style, like, layer dream.
Yeah.
Where she thought she was awake, but alas, she was not.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so something like that worked really, really well. I thought that Jackie Earle Haley would have been a great successor to Robert Englund, given half the chance. I actually like Katie Cassidy in this movie, which I don't really like her in much of anything. I'll agree that Rooney Mara was a bit sleepy in it, but I think...
They should have flipped
the walls. I really think Katie Cassidy should have been more of the Nancy type.
She should have been Nancy.
Yeah. I think she would have brought a lot more to it. Because you could tell Katie Cassidy was trying to have a good time with it.
Yeah. But that was the thing, was like, Jackie, like, he was... For me... He was fantastic as Freddy. It's like, I just like him anyways. But I kind of feel like if they would have maybe altered him just a little bit more and to maybe give him that Freddy look with the makeup, maybe the fans would have given him a little bit more.
I just think this movie was doomed from the start.
Yeah, 100%.
The second that it was said that Robert Englund wasn't going to be coming back, I knew it was going to be a problem. But I have no problem being objective about something. This was a gateway movie for a lot of Gen Z to get into horror. This was an introduction to younger people to go back and be like, this was a remake, and then go back and watch the old rest of the series. A lot of younger people at the time, the 13 and 14-year-olds in 2010, loved this movie. Regardless of what the 45, 50-year-olds were saying when they were watching
it. And that was something that I always loved, like, going back and looking at reviews from, and you could tell who is watching it, where you get, like, some of the younger fans, they're like, oh, man, I loved it, it creeped me out, like, or whatever, and then you get the older fans, and it's like, you could see where some fans are like, oh, my God, it's just the same movie over again, I don't want to see the same movie, blah, blah, blah. And then you see a couple of other ones where it's like, oh my God, like, why did they change this? And it's like, so you, just the conflicting where it's like, we want the same because we want our Freddy, but we want something completely different. And it's like, every time you either change something or do something the same, we're going to bitch about it.
Yeah, it was Dune, it was total catch 22, but they did, Platinum Dunes did what they could with it, and I think overall it was fairly successful. There's a few issues that I wish they would have changed, or maybe just like a few scripty tweak things that we talked about in the last episode.
A lot of jump scares, a lot of, maybe like just tweak it a little bit more as far as it not being so of the time, because like around that
era, it is stamped with that date.
Because like around that time, like that's when you were getting all of like The Conjuring and Insidious and all those, like where it says everything's a goddamn jump scare.
And thanks, James Wan.
Yeah, I'm hip. We love those movies, but that's the thing, is it kind of fell into that criteria of a film. And they were trying to put out something, and the stuff like with the Micronauts stuff, like, awesome idea.
Yeah,
so
if you
good.
If you go back and listen to our episode on it, you'll hear us dig a little deeper on that. But there's a lot of really good ideas in the movie. And I think overall this deserves a reevaluation. I think this deserves a second look. If you haven't watched the film since it had come out, definitely go back and check it out and just acknowledge that the CGI sucks and move on.
I think what needs to happen now is that like Platinum Dunes or somebody that they has the rights or the criteria, you know, for everything for Freddy going forward, if they do another like a part two to this, this gives them the opportunity to do something completely new.
Yeah.
And because it's like with part two being somebody completely different, and like so they have that opportunity to like, okay, let's give the fans, you know, something that they really want, or like it's to not do another remake or whatever. It's just like, no, let's do something completely new. Like, because Rob Zombie kind of did that with Halloween 2. He did the first part of it as Halloween 2, but then, like, the rest of it was
the hospital thing was a bad dream.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, it's been 12 years. This thing is dead in the water.
Yeah.
I don't foresee the franchise being resurrected anytime soon, which really does make me sad, because I think they had the germ of something really good. Mileage may vary, obviously, but I really think this deserves a reevaluation. I don't think it deserves anywhere near the amount of hate. Well, yes, I will acknowledge this movie has a ton of problems. It doesn't deserve nearly the amount of hate and vitriol that it's been getting since it came out. Cause prior to its drop, there was a lot of excitement that we're getting a new Freddy, we're getting a new Nightmare on Elm Street. And then all of a sudden Rooney Mara comes out saying she hates this fucking movie. She hated doing it, blah, blah, blah. And the bandwagon jumps, and that's when everyone suddenly noticed that, oh, she's so lazy, and also the shit, she didn't want to be there. And it's like, you guys, I don't think you noticed that prior to her saying she had a miserable time making this and she didn't want to, but that's fine.
So, but I mean, no, it's fun for me. I really enjoy it. Jackie he's a creepy ass bastard. So well done. Mm-hmm. Like I really enjoy it.
All right.
For sure.
So number two should come as no surprise to anybody. Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Dream Warriors.
The Dream Warriors.
With a 4.75 on the skull rating. You could have waited for me to finish.
We got a 4.5.
4.75.
75. I stand corrected. I'm gonna finish the review like this.
Please don't. Doing your best Dawkins impression?
It's gonna happen!
Ooh.
Yeah, that one hurt. It was like from deep down.
Get hype. Stay hype.
It was not happening.
No, bad ideas. So Dream Warriors came in at number two with a 4.75. So nearly a perfect score on this one. If you go back and listen to that episode, we both came to the conclusion that it was probably the best done out of all of the original six. But I think it had the luxury because there was almost 2 years between part two and part three. So there was time to develop a script and to get Heather back and to get what minimal Wes Craven was offered the chance to write first. So there was at least a little bit of idea input in there, which is how they got Heather Langenkamp back in the first place, was because he's the one who said, well, let's bring Nancy back. It had the most likable group of characters. It had probably one of the most interesting concepts, where you're getting pulled into the dream, and then the idea of the hypnosil being introduced, where it's a dream blocker. So this has a lot, this movie's got a lot going for it. Plus it touches on the rash in the early mid 80s. It was like a rash of teen suicides, not unlike currently, because of social media, stuff like that. There's been a real uptick in teen suicides. Same thing was going on in the early to mid 80s. So it touched on those sorts of things. And it was getting into these sort of taboo-y type ideas. And we had the introduction of Amanda Krueger, which, honestly, you could have removed her from the story altogether, and I don't think it would have made that much of a difference.
It really wouldn't have.
It was a nice little extra.
Yeah.
But it was the sizzle, not the steak. So it really was, there was the idea of putting Freddy to bed for good. So this one got into a lot of really cool ideas, and I think it stuck the landing on most of them.
It felt as if it had the most solid foundation.
Like, it had the most thought put into it.
Yeah, and because it's like, okay, well, if you take, you know, part two out completely, and it just, you went from part one into Dream Warriors. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just go with that. It would feel more, like, coherent than anything. Because, like, with Freddy, it's like he's doing everything that you would expect Freddy to do. He's playing around with their dreams. He's got a couple of, like, really good creepy one-liners. Mm-hmm. And they're not jokey one-liners. Like, and the most iconic one of all time, the "Welcome to Prime Time, bitch." Like, it's terrifying because he's got her in his arms, and all of a sudden he, boom, like, says it, and then, you know, stuffs smash her right into the TV.
Yeah.
I was like, how fucking cool is that? And, like, for him to come up, or, you know, where he's doing the marionette thing, and he's towering over the building, and he's got the veins and stuff. I was like, that's fucking great.
Yeah, this had some of the best kills in the series. This had the best balance of creepy and funny Freddy. I really think this was probably I think that's the best way to describe it. This was the most well-balanced of that original run of the series. Yeah,
and that's the thing, is like, it gave you that essense of whenever he did show up, it was a problem. It mm-hmm. wasn't, oh, hey, Freddy's here. Like, it's
oh, no, Freddy's it's, here.
Oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I think throughout the entire series, one of the reasons why I love Dream Warriors so much is that you are rooting for the kids, mm-hmm. and you are booing the bad guy, mm-hmm. even though we all love Freddy. But, like, you're sitting there going, it's like, I want these kids to beat, I want Kincaid to just uppercut the shit out of him.
Yeah, you want them to win. You want, you're rooting for these kids to win. They're the most likable. They're the most relatable. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street's had a really good run of having fairly relatable characters. It wasn't like Friday the 13th, where you were just trying to find, like, the hot chicks and shit. Like, they were pretty grounded in reality, girl next door, boy next door, all-American types, which, cool, that works. But in terms of personalities and stuff, this was the most likable out of the entire series. And this was the best Nancy we got.
Yep.
I liked her far better in Dream Warriors than I did in the first film. And part of that is because Heather Langenkamp became, in over the course of the 2-3 years following that, became a much better actress. She got a lot more work, and she wasn't as stiff or as awkward.
Screw your pass.
Yeah, that'll teach me.
So, but that was the thing, is like, I definitely enjoy Dream Warriors more, like, because of that, because everyone would be relatable. However, one of the best parts of the movie, Cowboy Curtis, anybody?
Exactly.
Come on, man. Mm-hmm. Little Lawrence Fishburne action.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yeah, so Kincaid and Lawrence Fishburne, come on.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so Dream Warriors all day long. It's probably one of the best renditions of the Freddy that we all know and love.
Right. So if you've been following along and you stuck around after number 5 on our list,
don't jump ahead of us.
We're at number 1. I'm sure you figured out what that one is. Our top of the series was Wes Craven's New Nightmare, with a solid 5 skulls. Both of us agreed on this one. This was the damn best version of the movie we got. This was the damn best version of Freddy. I will say this until the day that I die. This was the Freddy Krueger I wanted. this was the Freddy Krueger that I first saw, and it scared the shit out of me. I stayed awake for weeks trying not to go to sleep. I thought he was under my bed. I would take a running jump into my bed because I thought that clawed hand was going to reach out from underneath me.
It's kind of like whenever I would go swimming in my pool, and I would just, like, I had, like, Jaws is in my pool. Like, it's going to happen. Shark's there.
So he was just, Freddy was under my bed waiting to snatch me. This movie scared the fuck out of me. So imagine my disappointment going back and rewatching the rest of the series and seeing how kind of goofy it was. Pretty much from the beginning, outside of, like, Dream Warriors, really.
Great graphics.
Freddy's Dead was the biggest disappointment of all. Which is
it's,
why
like,
it's
one
at
of my
bottom.
Favorite things to say.
That's why it's at the bottom. That's why it's number 9.
Playing with power.
This was the best written one. I love the idea that Wes Craven was so ahead of the curve. This was 2 years ahead of Scream, playing with the meta horror idea. I really liked that Heather Langenkamp came back. She was playing herself, but everybody was playing a fictionalized version of themselves. Migo Hughes was adorable. Rex!
Oh my god.
And then Rex is the goodest boy.
What the? He's such a good boy.
He's the goodest.
Love
good
me some Rexy.
This, in terms of the entire series, this movie is damn near perfect. I love the Hansel and Gretel angle. I love the luck of the Northridge earthquake happening 2 weeks before they finished filming, and they sent out an entire second unit to film all the aftermath of that, which Northridge was a huge fucking deal, and it was absolutely devastating to the Southern California area, that LA Orange County area, but like it was such as like, what, did you make a pact with the devil, Wes? What the fuck?
Yeah.
It just ticked all of the boxes, and yeah, the kills were minimal, but the ones that did happen were on the gory side of things, like Julie's death especially, where they paid homage to Tina's death in the first movie. But I think they did one better.
You ever played Skin the Cat?
Yeah.
Come on.
But
like, with
he
that.
Was darker. Freddy was darker. He was scarier. Yeah. He was more sinister. I like the makeup with the skin split. So go back and listen to that episode. We really did enjoy that one. I still feel like New Nightmare is damn near fucking perfect.
I also love, too, that it wasn't just Heather Langenkamp that they were... that. He was messing with. It was everybody. It was Wes and it was Robert Englund that like, and they were all being affected
except
by
for John
it.
Saxon for some reason.
Yeah, John, like that is the only thing where it's like I'm a little bummed that Wes isn't with us anymore, because I want to ask him, it's like, why didn't John get it?
Yeah,
I mean, John became his character from the first film.
Yeah,
but it's just like, why wasn't he having dreams?
I don't know.
Why
it was because it was supposed to mirror the first film where Lieutenant Thompson wasn't getting bothered by Freddy.
I don't know.
Freddy's dead, honey. So that's the ranking for that. So the question I posed to you before we started the list was whether or not going through these movies a little bit more critically has changed your opinion of them for good or bad.
And my answer is yes.
Okay.
Now,
extrapolate on that, please.
Because the way that it works is, for me, now that I'm watching this, as like a good example is Hellraiser. I am a huge mark for Hellraiser. Love me some Pinhead, throw me in some leather, and just let me go. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I spent almost 14 years with you. I didn't know you that was a thing you
were
into.
Like, I mean, I've basically become the Cenobite that's just got hot dogs and tacos in his hand.
Okay,
like,
that just took a weird turn I didn't see coming. I was talking about the actual BDSM thing. You're talking about something entirely different. I'm out.
I'm not that much of a freak. Anyways, but like...
I am.
Anyways, but like, no, but so Hellraiser is one of my... has always been one of my favorite films. And I remember we were driving to Georgia one year, and there's a podcast that we listened to, and they were kind of breaking down the movies.
So the Classic Horror Cast.
Yeah, and we were just like, and I was like, oh my god! I was like, they were dogging the movie. It was just like,
I wouldn't say they were dogging it, but they were definitely pulling it apart.
They were pulling it apart so much where I was just like, oh my god! I never really thought of it that way, and I had to go back and watch it again, like, thinking about all the stuff that they talked about. And I was just like, oh my God, yeah, this movie is not that good. Why did I like it so much as a fan? It's like, what things about it really made me gravitate towards that that look of the film? I mean, especially, like, when I'm a huge fan of, like, other kind of, like, special effects movies, like The Thing. That's one of my all-time favorites. It's like, okay, well, that acting's really good, and they, you know, special effects. It's like, everything works. Hellraiser, special effects are really fucking awesome. Acting, like, there's or a story, all that stuff. So with Friday the 13th, another one we're going to get into later on, but with Nightmare, back to this, I kind of felt like with all the films, like, it was doing the same thing, where I think as a kid, I gravitated towards watching all the special effects, and yeah, like, in the first film, where he's doing the big arms, dumb as shit, even as a kid, I was like,
that's stupid.
It looks goofy. But the thing was that I automatically was like, oh no, Freddy's my fucking guy, is when he did the face thing. And he rips his face, when the face gets ripped off and it's just a skeleton and he just laughs. I was like, that was fucking cool. Or when he cuts his own fingers off, and I'm like, stuff like that, where I'm like, it's so abnormal, but, and it's just, it works. And then, like, as the films got, you know, you get further and further down the line, the stuff with, like, the marionette and Dream Warriors. I was like, that thing, like, where he becomes the marionette and then he, you know, grows and then he does the whole thing. And
yeah.
Fucking awesome. But again, it's the special effects that I gravitated towards.
When you're actually paying attention to the script, though.
Exactly. And that's where it's like, you sit there and you're really focused on the story. You sit there and go, oh my God, this is falling apart. This is bad.
Hard.
Like, this is getting really rough. And it's really hard to, like, because you sit there and go, why the fuck did you do that? Why is this happening? Why? And that, we're watching it for the podcast, it hurts because you're not just going in for the brain candy. And I try to have fun with it when we do the podcast. And there are movies where, like, Dream Warriors, where it's just like, oh, that was, like, I really didn't see any problems with
it. Yeah, so that was reinforced, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's where it's like, but once you got into things like, let's say, let's go into Freddy's Dead. Freddy's Dead is a perfect one because we sit there, they were trying to play with all the little special effects and there was little stuff like, what's his name? The Spanish kid with the ear.
Carlos.
That whole scene was fucking awesome because you're playing into his, you know, the deal with his mom, the fact that he's got the hearing aid and then like, and you like kind of overdo it and you turn it up to 11 type of thing. That was a great kill. Like, it was awesome. But at the same time, it's like, where the fuck did his head go? You blew up his head. It's like the kid just like he's you don't go all the way with it. And that's where it's like there's stuff that you kind of miss. But again, that goes to the special effects area with it. So that's the stuff with the series in a whole for me. I gravitate towards Nightmare for the special effects and the outlandishness of the dreams. Once you get into the stories of them, it's hard to really, like, get them to, like, grasp, like, roots down and, like, to really get a hold on. They try. Bless their heart. They try.
I would argue, but no, not so much, just because of the way that these things were basically written on the fly as cash grabs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you go from, like, Dream Warriors to, was it, well, you got Master
the child.
Yeah. So, I mean, they try to keep it consistent, but they're trying to do something new, and it's just like, the ideas are just, they just keep pushing them down the hill, and it's just,
I felt like they kept trying to run in quicksand, and it wasn't working.
Yeah, that's a good, I like that analogy, yes.
I think part of the issue, and for me, this, it changed the series a lot for me, too.
Yeah.
Again, going back to, yeah, this is fun brain candy, but the issue that I struggle with, especially knowing a lot of the behind-the-scenes shit, is how many of these movies were just studio cash grabs?
Also,
that bothers me.
Another little thing that I thought was interesting too was how flipped we are in our viewings, because you started at the end, I started at the beginning watching them. So we basically kind of crossed paths through our, you know, years of watching and things like that. We're, and that's something that I think is also really nice to I guess to kind of find, is just like how that that transition can take place. So
I always had fun with the series outside of a couple of outliers, but generally speaking, I ended up a little bit disappointed when, for the most part, like my opinions on Freddy's Dead and New Nightmare and Freddy vs. Jason and stuff didn't really change at all. They pretty much stayed the same. Dream Warriors, I think, got better. My opinion of Dream Warriors went up. But the disappointment of the rest of them, especially for 1984, that was the hardest one to swallow, because after we finished it and I sat back and thought about it for a minute, I'm like, this movie's not that good.
And that's what I felt with Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Where you sit there, I was like, oh man, I love it. But then you sit there and you're watching, you're like, wow, this is not.
It's just not that good. Yeah. Like, the idea of the film is great, but it's just, the execution of it's just not as good as I would have liked it to be. And part of that is because I started with Scary Freddy, the scariest version of all. And it's the one that most people hated, but I was 8. That was the first one I was allowed to watch because it was the most current one, and that was what was on pay-per-view. So, okay.
Your dad's black box.
My dad's black box.
He's a thief.
I mean, the statute of limitations is probably longer. It's been 30 years. It's over. But the black box thing, like, shut up, Megan. But, like, watching it at 8, 9 years old, I'm going to have a different opinion of it. But the difference is that watching New Nightmare again as an adult, that fucker still holds up. And if anything, understanding the story writing process and those sorts of things a little bit more now makes it even better for me, especially because this was Wes Craven's redemption with New Line. After he and Bob Shea had the falling out and they finally made amends, blah, blah, blah. Like, this was his way to come back, and with this being a gateway into Scream and him finally kind of, it took him 20 years to do it, but he finally found his footing as a director and he started making some of his best stuff in the 90s. So, like, this New Nightmare is always going to be the better one for me. So, but to have my opinions change, Dream Master, I used to have a lot of fun with. That went down the crapper. And, like, I ended up liking Freddy's Dead even less, somehow, than I did before. The critical eye thing definitely made it, like, extra shitty for me. And I'm like, this just got worse.
When how? My favorite things are Tom Arnold and Roseanne.
It's in a
the
bad movie.
It's not that good of a movie.
It's a bad movie.
I mean, I like them. It's fine. But it was just a...
But it's a bad movie.
Yeah. But that was the thing. Was, like, for the series in a whole, it's like when you... Like I was telling you earlier and when we first started, where it's just like you get those fans where it's just like,
do you like Ice Nine Kills?
Yeah. Do you like Freddy because of the series in a whole? Or do you just like just the concept of the character?
And those are two very different things.
Yes.
And I think it's important to objectively step back and figure out which of those two categories you fall into. I love the idea. Freddy Krueger as a concept and as a character, I love the idea. Freddy Krueger in several of these films, not so much.
And that's where I find it's really interesting to see where it, like, because I was that person early on where it's like I just liked Freddy as the character, and it's the same thing with like Jason and you know stuff like that, where it's just, but when you go into the movies, it's just very, you gotta like find the one that you like. For me, my end all be all Freddy film is Dream Warriors. Like
right.
that is the end all. I love New Nightmare because it's the scary Freddy again. Like that's the one we want. But whenever I think of Freddy, it's always Dream Warriors.
Yeah. And for me, it's always gonna be New Nightmare.
Yeah.
no matter what I do, I will always think of the split skin Freddy from Wes Craven's New Nightmare first.
Yeah. So, I mean, that one is, but what is like, so New Nightmare is your favorite Freddy of all time. Okay.
Yeah, I would say he is. Yeah. I don't like the wisecracks as much. I don't like the funny.
Do you miss me?
I want my bad guys to be bad guys. I love a villain. Don't get me wrong. Like, the villains are always the most interesting characters, just about always interesting characters to me in every story I've ever read. The villains tend to be the ones that have the most, like, heroes can be kind of white bread and boring, but the villains, there's always layers there, and there's always a motivation, and there's always something. So
we watch a lot of wrestling, and like, so you have to boo the bad guys, but the bad guys, they make you go towards them, like, so much. They make you feel so much emotion.
It's a weird charisma. It's a weird attraction. They don't have to be likable, but they're almost always the most interesting. So this idea of the Freddy character actually being taken over as a proper dream demon and not just this idea of a burnt pedophile, like, that's really cool. So I liked a lot of the things that they played with. Like, it's Freddy, but it's not Freddy, but it's scary. So, like, that's always going to be my favorite
one. Just hit me that it's, like, this dream demon, like, the image of this weird pedophile, like,
so much,
like, child serial killer, so much that he just wanted to stay as him. That's so creepy just to think about. Where it's like, oh, he could be any other demon, any other form, and it's like, nope, I want that guy.
Yeah, over millennia after millennia, this thing has taken on many forms, but that one just happened to be his favorite. The idea is super cool, and as a kid, the whole scene where Wes was talking to Heather at his house, and the script was up on his computer screen, and, like, when I was a kid, I was like, ooh, that tripped me out.
Yeah.
Seeing the script on the screen like that. I mean, now, obviously, I know how the sausage is made, but, like, that whole bit, I was like, wow! Like, it really just blew my mind.
And also the way, I love that Wes actually, it felt real when she starts talking about something, and you could see it on his face, like, I'm not okay. This is not okay. It's like, I'm trying to be okay, and it's not okay. It's just like, it's the meme of the dog sitting in the fire. It's just like, that's Wes. Like, yeah. I'm okay.
This is fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I definitely agree with that.
So what's your favorite Freddy?
My favorite Freddy of all time is the Freddy vs. Jason.
Mm.
That is my all-time favorite
Freddy. You like Kung Fu Freddy.
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't you? Like, oh my god, if Freddy did the whole, like, I would have just lost my shit.
Yeah, right.
That would have been hilarious. But no, it's like, the look and the feel of the Freddy was everything that I felt like from, like, Dream Warriors, like, would have actually been. Robert Englund, I thought, did a fantastic job in that, even though with the little parts that he, you know, did do. But,
I mean, he wasn't going to be able to do the action sequences, at least in a big way. But
the voice has always been a big thing with us and Freddy. I felt this one was so, was very consistent. They added the bass to it so that it kind of felt menacing. Right, they didn't
just deepen it.
Yeah, it felt like it was Robert, but it was more menacing. Yeah. And it was just,
that's exactly what that is. They turned the bass up.
Yeah, they turned the bass up just a little. And that was something where it was cool, the look of it. Like, that first scene where it's the intro, where he's talking about how, you know, I need to get back. I need to get all.
They need to remember me.
And they're doing that scene where they show his eyes, and it's that close up of the face. That is the Freddy. Like, I love that they mess with the contacts, and it's just, he looks evil. Like,
I love that they played with the idea that came at the end of Nightmare One, where, yes, if I don't believe in you, you don't exist.
Yeah, and I love to there was an original idea where it was supposed to be the kids would fall asleep to dream so that they could go and fuck with Freddy. And then Freddy was like, nope, I gotta get my mojo back. And then that's where the whole, like, thing, because he's tired of getting fucked with by the kids in his own dream. I was like, that is kind of funny, but it definitely, like, it...
Much better as a comic
book. Just, it neuters the character so much. Unless you just, like, he just kind of comes back as like, nope, you are all fucked. And it's just like, he just slaughters, yeah. But Jason did all the slaughtering, and that's where it's
yeah,
like...
that's where, yeah.
But even then, and the...
His dialogue was, or Freddy's dialogue was better.
Freddy's dialogue was good. I like just that, the kind of connection that he had with the kids. Like, there was the one scene in the bathroom where he's the kid's brother, and he's doing the...
Oh, in the tub?
Yeah. I mean, granted, like, that kid, I've actually heard that there was rumor that they were wanting to try and get him as Freddy, because he did so good in Freddy vs. Jason, but it's like, again, you know...
I mean, it would work. He's a lot older now.
Oh, yeah, no, he looks good, and he's got the face, and he's got the, you know, the kind of that Freddy charisma. So, I mean, he could do it without the makeup, so I was like, it worked. But...
And he's an evil ginger.
Yeah.
Soulless ginger.
So, but I mean, like, it was fun, and that, the look, the feel, and of that Freddy, that one has always been my favorite.
And there were stakes, which I think is forgotten about a lot. There were stakes for Freddy.
Yeah.
He had to, he was trying to come back from basically purgatory.
Yeah.
So there were stakes for him. To get out and to get back to his groove.
Yeah. And then the whole ending where Jason's walking up and he's got Freddy's head and then he does the wink at the end. I was like, oh, come on, like that, how cool is that? Where it's like, okay, well, you know, you don't really know who actually won, even though it was totally Jason.
Well, on three, say on three, say your least favorite Freddy. 1, 2, 3. Freddy's dead.
Oh, sorry, like I knew you were gonna say it, but yeah, Freddy's dead was my worst. Oh no, no, sorry. Freddy's Dead is pretty bad, but I did not like Dream Child. The Dream Child Freddy I did not like.
The makeup was crappy.
Yeah,
but I liked the character better, so he's getting a pass.
Okay.
Freddy's Dead was unforgivable.
Freddy's Dead was pretty bad. Just the power glove, the whole deal. Like, it's just...
Lazy. It was lazy.
So, I mean, again, it's like Freddy's Dead is just...
Kids.
Yeah. Oh, my God. If that's the last line of your big bad villain... Mm-hmm. It like that's womp, womp. That sucks so yeah. bad.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like Jennifer's body. It's like my tit. Mm-hmm.
So, what was your favorite kill in the series?
My favorite kill. I actually had to think about this one because there was a couple that really stood out to me. But, I mean, it would have to be the marionette. Like, I mean, that one, it's just got everything that, it's got the build up to it. It's got the weird, just the dream sequencing to it. And, on top of just having all the other kids from watching it happen, not just where it's in most dreams, it's very much a isolated event.
Yeah.
And that is something that was really, that really set that apart, because you're watching a sleepwalker and he's falling to his death and stuff like that. So
in front of an audience.
Yeah. It was like that one I think is probably going to be my go-to for sure. I mean, I got a lot of them, but I think that's my go-to.
I think,
Can I give you a runner up?
No.
Damn it.
You get one. Because you talk too much as it is.
Real quick, the roach one.
Yeah, that one's fun.
The roach motel. That one's really fun.
That one's super fun.
Yeah.
I would have to say, probably in terms of, like, favorites. There's a toss-up there, but I think I might have to go full classic on this one. I think it might be Johnny Depp's death scene.
Ooh, getting
the dragged bed. Into the bed. Yeah, I think because it's timeless.
And it's a practical effect that was really cool. And it
damn near killed the they could only special do it effects once. Guys. Yeah, they had one to get that done.
And it still worked. Like, it was still a really cool thing, but it's just the bed. It's Johnny Depp.
Bingo.
That's cool. Good choice.
Yeah, it's simple. It's effective. The geyser of blood is still to this day super fucking cool to see. So that one's, that one I always get a little like smiley about because it's just fun. Yeah. It's just a super fun one.
And worst kill of the series? Come on, the fact that you're thinking about it is just ridiculous. I'm upset with you.
What's your worst kill?
Oh!
Yeah, Rick's was pretty bad.
Rick's was...
I don't know, man. The coach in the shower getting snapped to death by the towels was pretty bad. Maybe not so much because that was at least funny.
I like that one more than the invisible kung fu with the floating glove at the end. I was like that just sucks. I mean, that sucks worse than Super Freddy, and Super Freddy sucks. But like that was the thing, is like even the towels, I was like, that was more enjoyable.
It was funny at
in
least.
Some weird way.
But and it was just, so shitty. It was like, yeah. Oh yeah, you get what's coming to you. Yeah, Rick's was pretty bad. I don't know. Kristen sucked pretty hard, too.
Oh, yeah. It's like, take my power!
Yeah, that was pretty fucking bad.
That was pretty bad. Like, and also, too, it's like, what a shitty way to get rid of your other, like, survivor girl. And it's just like, you just threw her in the trash is what it is. Like, it's...
Yeah. Yeah. Almost quite literally, because she was thrown in a furnace.
It's kind of like, I like in Dream Warriors where, yeah, Freddy finally kills Nancy, but it was a...
It was a satisfying and a gotcha.
It did. It was like, oh my god, no. It's like, you actually felt like, shit, they got her. And it wasn't like in...
she was so close.
In like Halloween, where they fucking just threw Jamie Lee Curtis off the roof and like... And that was it, like, at the beginning of the film. We'll get into that one later, but I was just like, Jesus Christ, like...
Yeah, no, Nancy's was probably the best one. And it was a gotcha at the end of Dream Warriors. So, do you have a favorite dream sequence?
Favorite dream sequence... I do really enjoy Kincaid's dream sequence when he gets... when his dog, Jason... pisses and awakens Freddy, and but the whole thing of Kincaid just being in this massive just world that is just one big car, you know,
junkyard,
like that is just a really cool thing because they did the whole camera backing up and you could see the curvature. And it's just, it was a never ending thing. I love that because that just means that it's like,
he's really trapped.
He really can't go anywhere. And just the whole thing of, like, him screaming out, just Freddy's back, and it just really kind of sets it up. I don't like the way that he died, but I was like, I like that dream-esque, you know, sequence. A lot of the stuff in the remake, too, was really cool, where they would go back into the school. And then Freddy really – and it wasn't that Freddy was playing around in this boiler room so much. He was actually playing around in the school, and – that's creepy on its own because he's playing hide and seek and doing all the stuff at the chalkboard. I was like, I dig on that stuff a lot.
Yeah, actually, I'd have to say I think one of my favorite dream sequences is Nancy in her coma. Well, her almost coma. It's so fucking creepy where she gets
the remake?
In the remake, yeah. When she's trying to get away from Freddy and she gets sucked down into the hallway of blood. And then gets pulled down into her bed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And in the little pink dress.
Yeah, like, even though the CGI, yeah, we get it. Yeah, you know. It's still cool.
But it's really creepy.
The micronaps part in the remake, too, is really cool, too, just because...
Oh, in the pharmacy?
Yeah, where Freddy's walking by and he's, like, slashing at the shelves and it kind of keeps flipping back and forth. So I like that, where it's, like, her brain is basically just...
It's turning off and on again.
Yeah, glitching like a bad Windows computer.
Oh, for real. Boom, boom, boom. But I would say probably if I have to go with, like, the original series as far as dream sequences go,
I mean, there's a lot as far as, like, with, what is it in the, I forget her, I always forget her name because they kind of just, like, they redid it, but, Greta. Greta's was really good because it actually dealt with her mom being creepy. It's just it's like,
the eating disorder.
Yeah, the eating thing, and then Freddie showing up and, you know, just feeding her like a, you know, like a baby and just overstuffing her. But then having Alice having those weird dreams with the, you know, from the baby, and you can see Greta coming out of the fridge with the big fucking cheeks, and then Freddie dragging her back in. I was like, that's fucking cool. I was like, that's really cool, because it's like, it's a whole goddamn thing. Alice's boyfriend, baby daddy's name?
Dan. Handsome Dan.
Yeah, Handsome Dan with the fucking motorbike thing. Like, that was another cool, like, special effects thing that was ruined by Freddy dialogue.
Yeah, for real.
Because they turned him into, like, a motorized Cenobite.
That's why it wasn't my favorite, because Freddy spoke.
Yeah, like, this boy has a need for speed.
Do you have a favorite character that's not Freddy Krueger?
It's a toss-up, and this is weird, but it is a toss-up between Rex, and yes, Rex is a character.
Rex is the goodest boy protector.
He is the goodest. And it's like, I love it because that little boy has made him, Rex is his protector, and he makes it a point that, like, it becomes its own thing. Even though he has no dialogue, it's like, it is. So I like the idea of Rex, yeah. But Kincaid. Kincaid is my all-time favorite, like, character that's not Freddy. Kincaid is, he's got just that charisma. He's just got that energy. He doesn't give a shit. He's not scared of anything. But then, like, when he does die, he's scared. But at the same time, like, from Dream Warriors, where he's like, hey, Freddy, put the hat, like, come on. Like, he's fucking ready to go. He's bending chairs.
Mm-hmm.
He's fucking in it. So Kincaid is my number one.
Yeah.
Who's your...
I'm trying to think. I really liked Mark in Freddy vs. Jason. I thought he was a pretty well-done character. He was pretty three-dimensional. I loved his oh shit moment when he realized that he was spreading the Freddy virus. Oops.
Yeah.
I didn't mean it. Can I take it back now?
Yeah.
That whole moment was pretty cool.
Oh, shit. We're doing it again. No. Yeah,
and his whole thing was because of his brother.
Yeah.
He was very relatable. He was very realistic. But I think probably Heather Langenkamp.
Yeah.
In New Nightmare. This was the best version of quote-unquote Nancy that we were going to get. She was willing to put a lot of things on the screen. She acted her ass off.
And she did great.
She should have gotten stunt pay for some of the shit she did in that movie. I hope she got stunt pay. It was the best version of what we got out of that. And I like Nancy. I like Nancy a lot. The acting, sometimes the delivery in the first film, in the 84 movie, it just makes me cringe a little bit because it's just piss poor delivery, but I like Nancy. I like the concept of her. I really like that she was trying to be more empowered, and I loved what she did with the kids in Dream Warriors. And I think in terms of growth and character arc between those two movies, and then obviously Heather Langenkamp is a standalone for New Nightmare, there was a lot of character development there, which is weird for this series. It's really the only one.
Yeah.
Kristen devolved. Kristen got worse. Instead of her character arc where you're supposed to get better, she got worse.
Yeah. And again, she was really good with Dream Warriors, and then it went Dream Masters and just went shit.
Well, yeah, because Tuesday Night didn't do her homework.
No.
That's the only reason I can explain.
And I love, too, with Tuesday Night, where it's like they had to, like, explain who she was. Because she's like, okay, Kristen, come on. It's like, oh, so you're her. Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah, but no, Nancy slash Heather Langenkamp is probably, I would say she's my favorite in the series. She was super fantastic. Do you have a least favorite character?
Oh, that's somebody that's not Freddy, because Super Freddy sucks. It's the Prowler.
Wait, like the kid or his superhero alter ego?
Him.
The whole thing.
I don't like him.
He was desperate and kind of pathetic,
he was,
too.
It was weird because you were like, he was that character that you were trying to, he was really trying to figure himself out. as a character. Like, that's the thing, is, like, because he was that weird... He reminded me of, like, Skeeter from Doug. Like, yeah, like, it was just, like, it was a weird mashing, like, he... It was just that 90s kid, like, just the look of him. Like, I was expecting him to like, pull out, like, a skateboard or something, you know?
And
was,
he had one.
That's what I'm saying, is, like, it was just a weird mashing of just that 90s kid. And, I mean, granted, because I was one and I dressed like that too, but, like, it was just...
Fashion victim?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Not maybe not as harsh as he was, but when he became the Prowler and his superhero alter ego...
Face, limp dick.
I fucking hated it. I absolutely hated all of it. And then the death scene, we talked about it too, where... Freddy's just, you know, shredding him up, and I was like, it was lazy. It was just like, it didn't work for me. It was just, and then the whole thing with him, like, trying to have some type of relationship with Greta, and just it just really wasn't there. And then when he's trying to get in on board with the Scooby-Doo gang thing, where it's like, it's real, and it's just like,
yeah,
I couldn't grasp onto him. He's okay, but it was right when he turned into a superhero, I was like, "Ah, fuck this guy."
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah. I think Kristen 2.0.
Yeah,
she might be my least favorite.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, like I can forgive the bad acting from Heather Langenkamp in the first film. She was 20 years old. Ew. It was one of her first acting jobs. But she was going for it.
Like, I mean, we give a pass to the Harry Potter kids and Sorcerer's Stone.
They were 11. But also, but like, Langenkamp, she was going for it. Like, you could tell she was trying. She really wanted to do the best gosh darn job she could do.
Give her a gold star.
Yeah. Tuesday night, she didn't do her homework. She didn't see it. It clearly didn't know who Kristen was supposed to be, what Kristen went through, her trauma, blah, blah, blah. She played her completely different. I get it. You know, they didn't get... It's fine. They didn't get Patricia Arquette back. She was doing other things. So they did the best they could and tried to get somebody. But it should be a seamless transition, even if they don't look alike. When they didn't look alike, but it should be seamless enough that you, at some point throughout the film, believe that that is the character you grew to know from the prior film. It should be that smooth, and it was not, and she had no idea who she was supposed to be playing, so...
Yeah, cause she was more, like, aggressive, I guess it would be a good way, because the Kristen 1.0, like, she was very... Not submissive, but you could tell, like, she was still more of, like, just unsure about what...
She was insecure. Yeah. She was dealing with the trauma. She was dealing with a mom who clearly wasn't paying attention to her. A dad who wasn't around. Like, she was going through some shit, and then she gets thrown into this asylum with her kids.
Yeah.
And this Kristen, you could see she was kind of troubled, but, like, people want to say that Rooney Mara came across as lazy... Come on, Tuesday night was so much worse. I mean, one of those two actresses has gone on to be nominated for an Academy Award. I'm not going to say who, but I'm sure you can figure it out.
So, but I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's one of those, like, yeah, the delivery was it's really bad. It's like, even like if you could have gotten Patricia to like, because like you're going to kill Kristen off anyways. It's like,
sure.
You know, why didn't you just try and, you know, work with her for, you know, the day or the week or something like that? And it's just, you know.
I don't know. For whatever reason, Bob Shea just didn't want to go about it. Yeah. So.
Money, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever. So anyway.
Yeah. Hey.
I think that's it.
All in all, like, I'm still a Freddy fan. Like, I'll still watch these films.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't call yourself a horror fan and, you know, not watch them. It's just, I mean, our kids are getting into them now, so it's like I'm excited to like really kind of let them find that journey too, and experience it for themselves. And I mean, our kids listen to Ice Nine Kills, and like our son just tonight was listening to the Nightmare song.
Well, I mean, part of his bedtime routine is a couple of Einstein Kills videos before to go to bed.
Because we're good parents.
That's just, can I do my bedtime routine? Sure, kid.
Because the American Nightmare.
Yeah, he gets the lyrics all wrong. It's adorable.
It's adorable.
It's so fucking cute. But that's it. This is the punctuation mark at the end of our Nightmare on Elm Street series. So we're done with that for now.
And I'm glad we went 50 minutes. Almost hour and a half. It's like, you know, but that's where you know that you have a good conversation on hand. So enjoy this bonus episode for sure.
And then join us next week when we pick up with the Halloween series. Yeah. We've already done Halloween 1 and 2. And we did the first Rob Zombie remake. So we've done three of them already. So next Tuesday, I'll see, it's going to drop either Thursday or Friday after the last Nightmare episode. So yeah, on Tuesday next week, we'll be covering Season of the Witch.
Yeah, another controversial Halloween movie. And on top of that,
that's also getting a modern reevaluation.
Yeah. Now, on top of that, it's like, you know, Halloween is probably one of my least favorite
This is going to be franchises. Really interesting. So yeah. Going through the Nightmare on Elm Street series negatively impacted your view on it. Let's see if this will positively impact your view on Halloween.
I wouldn't say negatively impacted, but it definitely...
It took some bumps and bruises.
It definitely, that's a good way to describe it for sure. Up. So for this one, it's like, at least I don't have to sit there and listen to Loomis give it out his math problems and like...
We've done that part already.
I shot him 6 times and he was 15 years old and like...
We do that already.
Yeah. But so Season of the Witch.
If you want to catch that, make sure you subscribe. It'll drop in your favorite podcatcher next Tuesday. Like, share, comment. 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated. Please and thank you. Join us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher at Creepin' It Real. R-E-E-L is a movie reel. If you have movie ideas or if you just want to bring something up and talk to Lunchbox, you can email us at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com. And don't forget, we also have merch, which is pretty sweet if I do say so myself, creepinitreal.redbubble.com, or hit that link in the Instagram bio to take you directly to the merch page.
I did it. It's me.
And he shameless. But so yeah, while you're waiting for the next episode to drop, order a sweet Creepin' It Real t-shirt. We won't be mad at you.
Not at all.
So until next week, where we pick back up with Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, I've been Mistress Meg.
I've been Lunchbox.
And just remember, kiddies, the glove is gone.